Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
April 8th, 2008. The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, a chat with Steven Johnson at Photoshop World, Orlando, Florida. Welcome back to another Digital Story. I'm so sorry I left you hanging last week. It was one of those weeks where, well, you know, I'll tell you the main thing. Here's what happens. When I go from the West Coast of the U.S., San Francisco area, to the East Coast of the U.S., and then have to do things early in the morning, that 8 a.m. Meeting on the East Coast to my little clock is a 5 a.m. meeting. And I'm not a morning person. I mean, you know, the joke with me is, yeah, I'm a morning person, 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, not 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning, 7 in the morning. And then, of course, you do all the stuff late at night because that's when the networking and the meetings and the other stuff happen. So I just plain ran out of time, but I'm going to make it up to you this week because I have a terrific interview with Steven Johnson. Now, in case you don't know who Steven is, he's been a pioneer in digital photography since the very beginning. Of course, there's a little redundancy, right? Pioneer, beginning. But he's one of the first serious digital photographers I ever knew. He published a book, I believe 2 years ago, called On Digital Photography, which is a fabulous book if you really want to know about the history of photography and how digital fits into it. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in the interview that I'm going to run here in a few minutes. Now, there's another part of the interview. There's all sorts of good stuff in this chat. We talk about megapixels, which I just love that part of the conversation. We talk a little bit about photography in general. And then on the third part of the interview, we talk about displaying your prints, which is a talk that Steven was doing at Photoshop World. And once he told me that he was working on that, that I really wanted to talk about because that's something that we haven't talked about much here on the Digital Story, which is, you know, what kind of lighting do you use? How do you hang your prints? You know, all that kind of stuff. And this is whether you're thinking of a gallery or thinking of just setting up something at home. There's some important stuff here, and Steven does a great job about talking about all that, and that's in the third part of this interview today. So it's not a very long interview. I think we go about 18 or 19 minutes, but I think you're going to enjoy all three parts of it. So what I thought I'd do is run the interview right now with Steven Johnson from Orlando, Florida, and then I'll come back and we'll do a little virtual camera club business, including this month's photo assignment and everything else that's going on. But right now, why don't you sit back, whether you're at home or on a commuter train or somewhere in traffic in your car, and listen to what Steven has to say, and then I'll jump back on and we'll do a little bit more Digital Story stuff. All right, here we go, and here's Steven. I'm Derek Story, and I'm here with Steven Johnson. Steven Johnson,
hey, Derek.
Legendary digital photographer, and I hate to qualify it as digital photographer, but that's how I know you.
I certainly don't do that. I'm a photographer.
Yes, yeah. When it comes down to it, but you were the first guy that I saw out there with a 4x5, capturing things as you saw them, and I had never seen that before. You were the first.
Well, it was certainly in my inclination in all of my film days to try and have the film rise to the occasion of recording what my eyes were seeing. There was not going to be any different sort of agenda in the digital age other than it was quite clear from those early handmade Better Light scanning backs and the new ones today that film was not nearly as capable of doing that as silicon. And so when there was an opportunity to photograph with that same stylistic intent, with resolution and dynamic range like we'd never seen before.
Right.
I was there, yeah.
Yeah, you were definitely there. And, you know, one of the reasons why I bring it up, because your book here, On Digital Photography, I think does a great job of talking about photography and then placing the digital part within
within that experience. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to tell you, you don't know this, but I had someone told me a comment today, actually, that this photography book was one of the few photography books that this person has read, reads a whole bunch of them, where you read it all the way through. Mm-hmm. Read it from start to finish. And, you know, a lot of times we'll kind of pick and choose, you know, around into a specific area of our interest. But this book, because it sort of grabs you and takes you that way, doesn't it? I mean, well, have you heard that comment? Have people talked to you that
way? I've certainly heard people talk about it being a book on photography rather than about digital gadgetry.
Yes.
And that was certainly my intent. My intent was to make a book that both traced the evolution of this digital, this electronic photography medium that we're digitizing, and really put it in historical context and with the context of someone who has loved photography for a long time, had very classical values about photography, mm-hmm. but nonetheless saw the technology as just a means toward trying right. to record the light that my heart was reacting to. And so I think it's meant to be a modern photography book that becomes a holistic look at where photography is and where the current photography came from. And in that sense, I think it's a broad-based humanities textbook as well as a treatise on photography that we're in the midst of.
I totally agree. And it was so nice of you to sort of set up my next question for me that I wanted to ask you anyway, which is, what is the state of, and I'm going to say, photography right now? In your opinion, what do you see going on?
Well, the most fundamental thing that's really fun right now is the whole ease of digital is empowering so many more people to be able to get involved in photography and dive rather deeply in without the mm-hmm. burdens of darkroom or the cost of film and development and printing. And that's just a wonderful aspect of where that magic of photography can be more fully realized by more people. Now, that doesn't say anything about where the aesthetic is or where the technology is relative to where it can be, because, as I say in this book, we really still are in the Stone Age of electronic photography.
Yeah.
We're really at the beginnings, and people talk about it as though we've made some great strides. And we've got some amazing little devices doing nice little things that is far superior to film. But it's nowhere near where photography yes. is going. And we need to keep asking the most of this technology, not accept shortcuts, smoke and mirrors,
yeah.
and a lot of winks of the eye about
yeah.
what things are really doing. We need to be straightforward. We need to be clear about where we feel there are shortcomings and try and have those addressed. I mean, modern cameras are a good example. So many of the controls that we wish to be able to use are now buried in sub-menus on the
yeah.
cameras rather than being easily accessible.
Yeah.
What happened to depth of field scales and lenses? What happened to the electronic cameras being able to depth of field and ideal focusing point calculations? I mean, there's all sorts of things where we're dumbing down the instruments even as they're more capable and burying very basic things in sub-menus. We shouldn't be doing that.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I feel like that at this point in photography right now, we're very much in the age of marketing photography.
Yeah.
And I think the megapixels arms race is one of the areas where we see that. We're talking about this silly thing instead of really talking about other other photographic features that may be more valuable to us.
Well, I wouldn't call the megapixel count silly. In fact, I think it's quite a serious thing, but you need to understand it in the context
right.
of other kinds of issues. Most people are not aware that when they take their 12-megapixel camera and get a 36-megabyte file out of it, that 24 megabytes of that information is literally made up.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
we need to be aware of what a Bayer pattern camera is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have remarkably high-quality images, but it is given the fact that has taken place.
Yes.
And then what it becomes additionally relevant is, because of all of these larger format printers, people have developed a lust for very large prints.
Yes.
And that is very directly related
yes.
to how many sensors are there to begin with.
Yeah.
And then people, like we were saying a moment ago about making up 2/3 of every camera shot, well, then people want a bigger file yet beyond that, and so
yeah.
then they turn around and make up even more. So I've actually got another concern floating, that people are accepting a a much lower quality of photograph than we would have accepted in the Silver Age, and that they would accept if they demanded a little bit more and educated themselves a little bit more about what's possible in photography.
Yeah. You know, I probably shouldn't ask this question, but I just can't help myself, bringing up the megapixel thing.
Yeah.
So have you heard David Pogue's talk or heard any, his column or anything where he has a talk that megapixels don't matter? And he said that he took a 3-megapixel camera, a 5-megapixel camera, 8-megapixel camera, and 10-megapixel camera, made prints from them, found this way to, you know, keep it a level playing field, and that all these photography experts could not tell on enlargements which one came from the 10-megapixel versus the 3-megapixel. Have you heard that chat at all?
I'm aware David's going around giving that chat.
Yeah, right.
I haven't seen these supposedly equal playing field prints.
You weren't one of the people he asked, I suppose.
No, David didn't ask me about that.
Right.
And it's a shame that there isn't a clear recognition that the print size is directly related to how much information you acquire. I mean, you can make everything look equally awful, I suppose, and then say it doesn't matter. But I have not seen his test. I can't really comment on it other than the myth of megapixels may well address the crucial shortcoming of considering only that.
Yeah.
And that I would agree with completely, that as these sensor sites get smaller and smaller, the signal-to-noise ratio gets worse.
Right.
The dynamic range potentially gets much worse. A lot of the advantages that electronic photography can bring to the table are far more challenged as you get the sensor sites smaller and smaller. So I wouldn't call it a one-dimensional consideration by any means.
Sure.
And so if he's trying to get at the fact that that becomes the marketing differential, I would agree with him.
Yeah.
That you can't look at just that.
Yeah, and I agree with that part, too.
But it's also quite true. You don't have detail unless you capture it to begin with.
Yes.
And the only way you capture it is maximizing the capture is getting near the resolution of the lens.
Yeah.
Once you go beyond that, you won't gain anything.
Yeah.
But up to that point, you will gain more information.
And just as a side note, I want to say that one of the things in the book that I like is where you talk about Bayer pattern and that stuff. So I think the explanations in here are terrific and really helpful that way.
Oh, you know, one more thing I wanted to add about that last point.
Right.
Traditionally, when we wanted to make big prints, we carried big cameras.
Right.
And when we wanted to make smaller prints, and we used the portable cameras that were more convenient. Nothing's really changed.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. I mean, there's a certain amount of logic there.
There is.
There is. Okay. At some point, physics come into play.
Yes.
So now, I want to change gears for just a second. I've been lucky enough to come over to your studio, and there's an experience there when you go into the gallery room in particular. The lighting, the selection of images that are on the wall, how they play with each other, and, you know, it feels like immersion, actually. And you've been talking, I know you did a talk here a little bit about
photographic exhibition.
Yeah. Can you, I think you're very good at that, you know. and you know, it's one thing to take a good picture, it's another thing to process a good picture, but then this is sort of what really drives it home.
Well, photographers, if they really take control of their own work, really do become jacks of all trades to some degree. I mean, now we're having to be not only photographers, but image editors, archivists. Yeah. We're having to be printmakers. And most of us are going to be matting and framing our own work and deciding what context it should operate in. And then, by very natural extension and by the inherent empowerment that comes with digital, you're very likely going to be mocking up your own publications, even if they don't go to press. You're
absolutely
going to be able to put things together and organize them and give a access to your work and a presentation for your work that was simply impossible by any normal means in the past. So all of that's a wonderfully empowering but ever more complex role for the photographer to play. So when I think about the space that I want the photograph shown in, if I'm going to go ahead and rent the commercial space, which I've done, and have a place to work and have a place for my staff to work and have the hands-on lab that we've built to teach in, well, as you well know, I'm also going to build galleries at the same time.
Oh, no kidding.
And certainly the galleries were the most expensive to build in remodeling the old grammar school that is an art center that my studio is currently in. But yeah, attention to detail. We had to resurface all the walls. We had to put a new carpet. We had to do a whole new electrical system. And for me, the gallery presentation, like the design of a page of a book, like ultimately the design of the photograph itself, has to be elegant, simple, eloquent, if possible, or at least allow eloquence to take place with the images themselves. So yeah, we did a four-hour class on Tuesday where we're talking about photographic exhibition, and it involved everything from studio lighting to how to mat and cut a print, reminding people, or in some cases introducing people, to the idea of archival framing and matting, where the artwork is treated as something just short of sacred, so that nothing ever touches it, no glue is ever attached to it, no acidic materials ever come in contact with it, big healthy borders around the prints, those sorts of things that really do lead toward the maximum chance for that print having its real maximum life. That, and again, the kind of craft that you go into in every other part of photography needs to take place there as well. You know, and I can't emphasize that as much. We, when we're casual in shooting, we usually end up with sloppy photographs.
Mm-hmm.
When we're not careful about our printing, the prints rarely look like we want them to look.
Right.
In a technical medium that is also about aesthetics, we have to take that deep breath and apply the craft just like we would to anything else that is about beauty. Whether it's playing the piano as perfectly as you can imagine, or guitar or whatever, or whether it's taking the time to make that print be the most pristine, beautiful representation imbued with as much life as possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are very important things. So how you treat it after the fact, the mechanics of making sure your viewing lights are at the same color temperature as your proofing light and white point of the monitor.
Yes.
We have the luxury of doing that now for the first time, really, in exhibition history.
Yeah.
Because of the new light bulbs that are coming on board, because of the kind of color temperature control that we can bring to bear. I mean, we're again, not because of the digital age in this case, but because of needs for energy conservation, we now have these compact fluorescent bulbs at 5,000 and 6,500 degrees Kelvin.
I know.
It's just amazing.
We actually have some lighting us up right now, you know, right there.
It really is
nice and cool.
A huge step forward.
Yeah.
And that's exciting.
So along those lines, do you have any suggestions for the passionate photographer who wants to set up something at home in terms of, you know, he or she's done some nice work. They've paid attention to detail all the way through the process, and they want to show off a few of their prints in their living environment. Do you have any tips around lighting or anything that would help them with that?
Well, I guess my basic, I do have a few rules of thumb. I wouldn't call them absolutes in any way, or the gospel according to Steve, or anything weird like that. But generally speaking, we light with quartz halogen because it's a fuller spectrum, the fluorescent. Mm-hmm. But by the same token, it's harder to get quartz halogen lamps up toward daylight.
Yes.
So generally speaking, I use the Solex bulbs at 4,700 degrees Kelvin. But I'm looking at D65 bulbs because that's the white point I calibrate my monitor to.
Sure.
And that 1,000 or so degrees in Kelvin can make a difference. And so I'm always looking at improving that light scenario. But the Solex bulbs, for example, are standard MR16 fixtures. They can be had for about $10 a bulb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're quartz halogen, yes, but they're not that hot that you can't use them. And I have a basic scenario up at a 45-degree angle and about 4 feet away.
Nice.
And if you can manage that in your own home situation, go for it.
Yeah. No, that sounds beautiful. And then, of course, neutral color on the walls?
A lot of people paint their walls all sorts of wild colors for home decor. And sometimes a photograph can look quite elegant on a strong color.
Right.
But certainly if it's a gallery situation, I tend to make them white.
Yes.
Doesn't mean that a neutral gray wouldn't work as well, but neutral is a real hard thing to chase.
Yeah.
And changes over time as well. But let me say one more thing about the lighting. These new compact fluorescents going in normal track lighting can be also quite good for display and a lot less heat and power involved.
Now, if you know you're going to be displaying with those lights, does that affect what you do on the monitor side? You know, when you're looking at your images and preparing them for print, or how do you kind of work with those differences?
Well, therein lies a huge quandary for mm-hmm. photographers. Now that we're taking control of the appearance of our prints to a degree that was never before possible, there's a whole world out there of museums and galleries with 19th century lighting
right.
almost in them.
Exactly.
Very warm, yellowish red light,
yeah.
3,200 degrees Kelvin, very warm as opposed to daylight. And we have these monitors that we're going to calibrate somewhere near daylight, somewhere in mm-hmm. that 5,000 to 6,500 degree Kelvin realm. We can put a normal light bulb or a 3,200 degree light bulb for a viewing light and calibrate our monitors down and imitate the kind of print, or make the kind of prints that would look good under this very yellow lighting. I think it's a poor idea. I think this lighting is going to go away. We have to print to what the best natural standard we can
yeah.
come up with that's independent of current technology.
Yeah.
So I print as close to D65 as I can.
Yeah. I mean, it just over the long haul, it just there's a certain amount of common sense to that that seems... The other way seems like you're going to the lowest common denominator, I guess.
Well, your prints may look better short-term in the
right.
local gallery or museum.
Right,
it
that's
can be
true.
A problem.
Right.
We've actually had galleries change out all of the light bulbs in the entire gallery for one of my shows.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. They won't do that for me.
They don't do that for me usually either. That was an unusual situation.
So people that want to find out more about what you're doing, I know you're teaching constantly. Where do they go?
SJPhoto.com is
okay.
the website. We have an ongoing series of workshops there, both hands-on studio workshops and field workshops. And, of course, the National Parks book hopefully is coming out this summer, the next book with O'Reilly.
Exciting. Exciting stuff indeed. And I just can't emphasize enough, this book is going to be a great book for years to come. If you haven't looked at it yet, take a look at it. If you want to know about photography and how digital fits in, this is the book to look at.
Hey, it should be a textbook in every college class in the nation.
I could not agree more with you. Thanks so much, Stephen.
Thanks, Doug.
Okay.
Okay, now you've got to admit that was fairly cool, right? So hopefully I'm out of the doghouse by now for missing last week. And I got all sorts of great stuff lined up for the coming weeks too. So I know I'm digging my way out. I can feel it as I speak right now. I'm getting the vibes back. Okay, some virtual camera club business. First of all, we have a new photo assignment for April. The photo assignment is angular. I don't know why. Maybe because I've been shooting a lot of buildings and stuff lately. I'm not sure. But angular sounds so good to me right now, and I'm hoping that it appeals to you too, and there are so many ways to go on this, but angular, as in angles, is the photo assignment for April 2008. I should have the gallery for last month's March up soon. I'm feeling, you know, slightly on top of things, despite my travel lately, and I think that galleries can go up a little bit earlier. But angular, so you can start thinking about what are you going to capture for angular in April 2008. I also want to mention grab shots, and could use a few more. So if you got one that you're sitting on, send it on in. And I want to mention the Digital Photography Companion, the book that's out. And it happens to be written by this guy, this kind of tall guy, does podcasting. Story, I believe, is his last name. And if you haven't ordered yours yet, and you think you're going to, now would be a great time. Because what we want to do is get off to a good start with this book. We have plans for it. I have some activities that I want to do around it. And I'd like to get, you know, that first batch of books out there as soon as possible. So now there's a link on the Digital Story site where you can order the book. And if you know, at the top there, it says Digital Photography Companion. You go there, just look for the Order Now button and check it out. And if you have any questions about it, make sure that you just email me. It could be good fodder for a blog post or whatever. And then what I want to do once we get, you know, a lot of these books out there, and then start having people send in, you know, techniques that they've tried from the book
and send them in descriptions with the pictures. And that's going to be sort of the evolution of the How I Did It feature that I have on the website right now. I just ran another How I Did It on Monday, I believe, Sunday night. And that's where a Virtual Camera Club member sent in a shot from Southern California freeway with no cars on it. And it's really interesting how he used the technologies in Photoshop CS3 and took a whole bunch of shots. And then, of course, you know, the merge technology as well. You can get it so that the cars sort of cancel out each other and all this sort of stuff, and you end up with nothing. And it's really cool, and he describes how he did it. So that's the latest How I Did It running right now, but I want to run some from folks that are doing stuff out of the book and anywhere. So if you don't have the book yet, get it in your hands, and as soon as you can, I guarantee you'll be glad you did. And then, of course, if you have any questions, just send them in or post on the site itself. And last but not least, I just want to mention that we have our sponsors are rolling along great, and I have a new one coming on. Red River Paper Company is going to be coming on, I believe, next month. And these guys are cool. They make great paper. They're environmentally sound, and they make great paper for less than almost everyone else that makes great paper. So I'm really excited to have them on as a sponsor for the Digital Story. And there'll be more about that next month. I think we're going to do a paper of the month and all sorts of stuff. And I did have a good chat with Low Pro, and we're working on doing the bag of the month thing. So I've got, you know, working with the cogs here, working with the machinery, trying to get this stuff going. And of course, I want to thank Photomagico from Boeing Software and Expo Imaging, Expo Disc, all sponsors of the Digital Story, helping us to keep this boat afloat. All right, well, I think that will do it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Stephen. I hope I'm out of the doghouse. And I hope to see you here next week. I will have a show next week. And we're off and rolling with all sorts of good stuff for April. Photo assignment, Angular. All right. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.